So I don't think there are literal underwater basket weaving competitions.
I'm sure someone has actually arranged one because it's, you know.
I know. I actually, when I was looking this up, I saw, you know, like a picture of a scuba diver weaving a basket. Scotch. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 203 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam. I'm currently being mesmerized by LEDs.
I'm Sam, and I make levels sometimes.
And this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is May the Sith be with you, yes. 20 Grind Team.
Feel the power.
Before we get started, we have a warning. There's going to be profanity in this show, so if you have a baby around, just put it somewhere else, and then you're good now.
Unless it can't process words yet, which I think is true for babies. I don't know how babies work.
I think they just slowly absorb the words until some certain volume of words has been put into them.
And then one of them
have to start coming out.
Yeah, one of them kind of bursts out.
Yep.
If you're not careful, it will be a swear word.
Yep.
Yeah. So you watch that.
Or if you are careful, depending on what your goals are.
That's true.
We'd also like to thank our supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net. We got a couple of new ones on the line. We got Christian Karstrom, who says, challenge accepted. The guy in episode 202 last week donated $7 he earned from a discount on Levelhead because of the exchange rate. And then you guys said, and he wants me to read this in a condescending, nerdy voice, oh, this will only ever happen once. Well, I paid the full price, so this doesn't even make sense now. But you're welcome. So thank you very much.
Beautiful. I appreciate that.
Buy Levelhead full price. Throw us some extra cash just for funsies. I'll take it.
Maybe we should change the donation system to the tip jar for game purchases. You know, instead of being like it's for the podcast, we just say if you just felt like you got more than your money's worth out of our gameplay experience.
Yeah. Now we open up a second tip jar.
That's a good point.
We just need tip jars everywhere. It's kind of like, well, like you got to collect rainwater in barrels.
We'll call this you one. Just
need, you just need tip jars lining the walls.
Yeah. We'll call this one game tips.
Yeah.
Which won't be confusing to
it's
anybody.
It's not confusing at all. We also got a message from Master Tom NL. Here's some leftover money I had laying around. Hope it's still good. Love your podcast. Came for game dev insights. Stayed for the joy and inspiration. You guys are awesome, and so is Levelhead. Thank you.
It's a little stale, I'm going to be honest. The money's a little stale. Tastes a little weird.
It's kind of musty.
It's got a musty scent to it.
I don't know where
tastes like.
Where's it been?
Tastes like drugs.
Yeah.
You know?
But that's true of all money.
Exactly. You know. is this person related to Retro Banana Man NL?
Yeah, what's the NL moniker? I don't understand.
I don't know. Well, I mean, we sort of discerned with the Banana Man that it was
he's non-licensed.
So either this is a non-licensed Tom running around.
Ooh, that's real dangerous.
Didn't get that Tom
is that
license.
Kind of what a birth certificate a license for your own name?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe he lost his birth certificate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know. It could be Tom, but we don't really know for sure.
Yeah.
He's not licensed.
We'd also like to thank our recurring supporters who just keep hurling wads of quarters at us just all the time. So that's fantastic as well. Let's talk about life. Spring is here.
Oh my God, it's beautiful.
There's joy in the air.
There are birds singing outside my window at 6 a.m. every day.
Yep. The sun is actually coming up around the time people are waking up, and it's actually going down closer to when people are going to bed.
Yeah.
So day.
Yeah, it was weird because it was also raining all of last week. So it's kind of weird waking up this morning at, kind of like, stumbling out of the bedroom at 7 a.m. and I have blackout curtains in the bedroom, so I can't tell at all how light it is outside until I walk out the door. Mm-hmm. And I walked out and I was like, is it noon?
Yeah, it was blindingly
bright. The sun was so bright.
Because even in the winter time here, it never gets that bright even at noon.
Yeah.
So I have I think last year I told a story on the podcast about this robin that had took up roost on my back deck.
Yeah. And is it Robin Watch 2019?
Robin Watch 2019. It's back. And the best part was that the nest was already there from last year because we didn't touch it. We just left it.
They just used the same nest?
No, it built another nest on top of that.
Oh, yeah.
Nest.
I mean, it can't be a lazy robin.
Yeah, it's like a double decker sort of situation. So it's just really tall nest.
How tall do you think it will get?
I don't know, but I'm really hoping that this robin lives a long time so you can just get like a 5 year
nest skyscraper.
A nest skyscraper
situation.
Yeah. So she's just hanging out there and we can see her. And when I'm getting snacks, she's like 3 feet away out the door.
I wonder what the thought process was. Robin shows up and she's like, I mean, I like this spot, but this nest, this isn't going to pan out.
Maybe once the nest freezes, it's no good anymore. You know, kind of like meat, if you freeze it and then thaw it, like it's not as good.
There's something about that freshness, man.
Or like a musty dollar bill. You know,
yeah, exactly. You, just, I can't, you need a new one.
I can't use this. This isn't a legal tender anymore. It's old.
But it's good to build a base off of. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, the foundations are strong.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You got to just keep going. Keep going up.
So, yeah, and the same way that if you freeze some meat, it's real hard. We can use that as a foundation also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I will say, so my wife and I were kind of disappointed with our lawn the past couple of years. It's been kind of brown and not very pleasing to the eye. Mm-hmm. And as an owner of a lawn, apparently you're supposed to be like, this grass needs to be
more
green and shit like that.
Yep.
You have to have the greenest grass.
You got to have the greenest grass.
The greenest, luscious grass.
And then what you do is nothing. You just kind of look at it and you're like, that's green. Mm-hmm. I did that. So
did you try spray painting it?
We did, but then it got brown. It died.
That happened. Yeah, that makes sense.
So that didn't pan out. So we had some people put some fertilizer and stuff on it last year and nothing really happened. And we're like, okay.
Did you try Propecia?
Nope. We just did the fertilizer.
Regular plant fertilizer.
The thing about Propecia is it's really expensive to cover an entire lawn
True, yeah.
It's also really weird because the grass just grows hair, which is just uncomfortable.
It's just a weird hair. The grass stays the same size and then it's just hair now. Which is not.
It's really uncomfortable.
Is the hair growing off of the grass or is it the grass replaced by hair?
It's growing off the grass.
Okay. Yeah, you still got the grass. Now you've just got also hair. And then the problem too is like before you mow it, now you got to shave it. So you got to really get in there with clippers.
God, but is it that gross. Good? Is it that good like thin soft hair or is it that horrible thick?
Oh no,
thick,
it's like beard
armpit
hair.
Beard
yeah.
hair.
Okay. Yeah, it's not good at all.
Although if you oil it, it gets really soft again.
Yeah, but I feel like we're kind of getting into a runaway sort of situation because now you got hairy grass and you got to oil the grass.
The goal was just to have a nice lawn. We're far away from that design attempt.
Yeah, now I just got to get a nice beard on in my yard, but I don't have a good lawn anymore.
Well, spring's here and it did rain for like 5 days.
Wait, so this is the problem now. So we mowed, like as the grass started coming back after winter and stuff. So we mowed it and then the next week go to mow it and the grass is so thick because it's been raining for a week and then apparently this fertilizer, just takes a while, mm-hmm. I guess, to do stuff with. And then the grass gets so thick that our mower literally couldn't cut it anymore.
It just gets clogged.
Yeah, you'd mow for just like 3 or 4 feet and then the mower's like and then I'd kind of like pick it up and there's just a mound of sort of damp grass sort of like packed in there. Got to like get a rake and throw it off to the side. So then it took like 4 times longer to mow, which means I can only mow half of the yard. So then the other half, I was like, I'll get to that tomorrow. Guess what happens the next day? It rains again.
Ooh, so
and then it rained for 5 more days. And now our grass is 1.5 feet tall. And it's only been an extra week.
To be fair, though, because we came over from watching Game of Thrones last night, and it looks great. I don't know why it's everyone's all about the super short grass, because it's really – when you have a big enough yard, it's like – it's got this sort of slight waviness to it.
I don't know what the deal is with grass. Just like – so I have a different problem with my lawn, which is just the fact that I have one. And I've done a pretty good job of not having one. I keep on encroaching the stuff that isn't grass into where the grass lives. But there's still some left. And actually last year there's this vine called Creeping Charlie. which I assume that somebody had named that after somebody they didn't like. So Creeping Charlie.
Uh-huh.
Like once it starts, you can't stop him because he's just creeping.
He just creeps.
But it turned out he creeped over the winter too. Just under everything. He was just like creeping. So that then when everything, thawed and things started to kind of grow back and stuff, all of a sudden the entire fucking lawn is just creeping Charlie. Just creeping. Just in there. And
that's great though, because like
– see, that's exactly that, it.
So that's not going to grow as tall. You don't have to cut it.
Exactly.
It's still green.
So it's basically killed out. It's sort of – killed out the grass in the places where that it has grown really lush, but it has these cute little purple flowers and it looks kind of nice.
This sounds awesome.
Yeah. So it's the problem is it also tries to get everywhere else. And so I'm constantly murdering because it keeps Charlie's creeping everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as far as the lawn replacement goes, it's pretty nice. Cause then I had the same problem otherwise that after a week of rain, I had about 1 foot of grass where there still was grass. So I had to go like weed whack that part.
Yeah.
And apparently so there's Charlie over here just hanging out. And then I got this fucking grass growing just a foot nuts in a week.
Yeah. So apparently this thing about lawns is a newer thing. It started in like the 50s or 60s or something. So it used to be the case that you just had an area around your house and nobody gave a fuck.
Yeah.
It was just, you've got some plants there and there's some green stuff and who cares? Now, for some reason, it has to be grass. It has to be grass. I don't know why. Weird. It's useless. Anyway, let's talk about Levelhead. Let's talk about what's happening with the studio. So Levelhead Daily Build is coming this
today.
Today, the day the podcast is coming out, so the 8th. So how's that going? What did that turn out to be?
It goed.
Yeah, it hit basically the design specs that we thought it would after playing around with it. The only special thing we really had to do on the editor side was, it was just funny if you still had all the editor categories and then like
a limited set of items.
Yeah, then like one thing.
You'd be like, let me check the enemies tab, and you go there and there's just like a single enemy just sitting there.
So we swapped it to, there's just a default tab, and then the other tab is your sort of basically your featured items. So that's where all of the items for that build come in. The response has been good so far from the people who've been on the beta branch for it. So we're going to roll it out and see what happens.
Yeah. So the daily build is kind of so once a day we pick 5 items and then up to 7 depending on some dependencies. So like if the last item is a golden key, then it's like, all right, well, we got to get a golden door in there, you know. Mm-hmm. So depending on how it rolls out, we expand it a little bit. And so then once a day we just turn that over and you can build a level using those items and only those items plus a basic set. And then what that basically allows for is if you're a veteran builder, then you've got just like an interesting set of constraints to work with for the day.
Game jam.
Yeah, it's like a little game jam. So you can still just go build a normal level with everything. But actually, it's always more interesting to build stuff with
constraints.
Especially so it's a time limited constraint and it's an item limited constraint. So it's kind
The time limit only applies in one sense, which is if you publish it after the timer runs out, then it's still fine. It just won't show up in the list.
It won't show up in the daily build list for today, but it'll still show up everywhere else. So that's kind of an interesting thing. And then this also kind of helps us get at – we have a small but vocal contingent of players who come into the game and just want to have everything. Mm-hmm. So they come in and they're like, listen, I don't know how this game works. I also don't know what any of these items are.
But I want them all.
I want all 100 or whatever of them. I need them all thrown at me right now. I don't want a tutorial. I don't want to be taught anything. I just want to be just thrown into the deep end, into the level editor, and just start making levels. So our stance on this has been,
nope,
that's how you get garbage. You know, like that's how if you
I think for starters, it's how you have a bad time.
Yeah.
For too long, in my opinion.
Yeah. So there's a very, very specific kind of player who won't have a bad time with that. But almost everybody will have a bad time with that.
But almost everybody also will think they'll have a good time with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because people always want to have more stuff.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so the idea of the daily build then is it lets us kind of poke at that. So we get to surface a few of these items that you literally don't have to have unlocked at all in the campaigns, which means you just get to have them. But it's not every single thing and it's not every single day. And so that way you have this limited set you can go play around with, and it's a really focused sort of way for us to get that fun. So
the people in the beta branch have been playing around with it, having a great time. I think it's going to go. It's going to be really interesting. So we've also made some changes to our patch deployment schedule. So I think our plan is for those who want to really be on like the cutting edge of things on Levelhead, I guess the more cutting edge. I mean, we're already in early access deploying weekly builds. So you're already,
if you want to get cut even more.
If you were to get cut real deep, you can switch over to the beta branch of Levelhead, and we have instructions on how to do that in our Discord server, and we're going to be deploying patches into there probably just every couple of days pretty much. Yep. So you'll get stuff before everybody else, and that means you also get all the sweet new bugs and crashes before everybody else.
Awesome, yeah.
That'll still go through our internal QA first, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. If we do some really minor changes and stuff, we'll just kick them right to the beta branch because that's fine. Anytime we're developing – so this is why like when we developed the daily build, we didn't have anything into the beta channel until the weekend because we had to develop this entire new system and run it through internal QA. So that's a thing that we're still kind of experimenting with the pacing on and kind of learning how that works. But so far, so good. So I also want to talk about what's coming up in Levelhead.
Yeah.
So we have this interesting challenge that I think it's a bigger challenge than we anticipated. And so we're kind of thinking about it as this quote, three game problem, which is Levelhead is a brand new IP. So people who come into it for the first time don't know anything about it. They don't know how it works. They don't know what makes it interesting. They don't know how to do all these interesting like movement techniques and stuff. They're kind of bad at the game. They don't know what's bad. They don't know what's good. There's all these different layers, right? And so we have to teach people how the game works, which is what the campaign is for. You know, you run through the tutorial levels, you unlock the stuff in the editor, we trickle out the content to you, and then you develop stuff, knowledge over time. So So we have that single, that sort of fully encapsulated single player experience. And then we have the building of levels, like the workshop. And so we assume that there's kind of a contingent of players who are really into building. Mm-hmm. And so they go into the workshop and they're just spending tons and tons of time in there. And the data kind of shows this on our back end, which is like, most people build levels, but a small subset of people build a shit ton of levels and spend a lot of time in the editor. And so that side of the game has to be really, really good and very compelling. And then the final piece is playing other people's levels. And they're sort of the social side of having the levels that you published get played and knowing that other people are playing your levels and all that mm-hmm. stuff. So that's where things like being able to follow people and then have their levels delivered to you via a subscription comes in. And
getting alerts when your level graduates from the marketing to the tower, all
that
sort of stuff.
And so, you know, a couple weeks ago we added the share codes URL feature. So now people are posting URLs into the Discord and stuff, and then people can bookmark each other's levels, and then like when they get home, then they can play down, you know, a playlist of levels that they've bookmarked throughout the day over the Discord or something. So all those systems are working very well on their own.
Yes.
And I think this is the thing that we have to come up with next.
I think the real challenge with Levelhead is weaving all of them together into an experience that is somehow seamless as it jumps between the different experiences. So currently the campaign, for example, you don't ever build levels through the campaign. You're not ever basically kicked out of the campaign and said like, hey, go, you know, try building a level before you come back.
Yeah. And the problem there is, of course, like we can't enforce that in a meaningful way. Mm-hmm. So if we had a requirement that you have to build a level and move to the next part of the campaign, all you have to do is just like go in there, just throw some crap down and hit publish mm-hmm. and you've technically done it. So
yeah. So it's not necessarily the design problem is not necessarily as simple as saying, well, just force people to do it. Right.
Right. There's a lot more.
There's a lot of stuff in there. And so one of the major thing we're kind of looking at for this next chunk, kind of like with the daily build, is just saying, okay, so we know that a lot of people play through the campaign. We know people, you know, take some time and build levels or whatever else, but how do we really somehow integrate all these experiences in a way that's meaningful for people and then also promotes people to go do each one of these things sort of in turn? So I think that's kind of the next big challenge. We're not exactly sure what we're going to do with it yet. So we got some ideas, but I don't want to say anything about it because, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, the question there comes down to, of course, there's a pacing question when it comes to like how much time do we spend developing different features and when do we develop them and in what order and that kind mm-hmm. of thing. Is it new game mechanics? Is it social features? Is it, you know, web technology? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's interesting because we've gotten the feedback actually coming in through the feedback system has been phenomenally good. Which I think was not something we necessarily anticipated. We thought it was going to be not the best.
We assumed really we would have a huge volume of feedback that would mostly be in the vein of people just being like, my game crashed, which is what often happens.
Or just, this didn't work without any explanation.
Yeah. Or I don't like this level.
But people have been really good and the suggestions have been really good.
Suggestions have been good. People have been very clear about what they think the game needs.
And there's an interesting bottlenecking issue when it comes down to this idea of DevOps again. So if we have, you know, just basically the three of us as the core team making Levelhead sort of bit by bit, then we run into this interesting issue, which is, so if you want more levels designed because we want to introduce some of the new mechanics in the game, then we also can't simultaneously have new art pieces going in, right? Because that's sort of all the stuff that I handle on this side. And so each one of us basically is our own bottleneck for different parts of the game. And so week by week, we have to try to make the call. Okay, like, you know, what seems like the best thing to do this week based on kind of where the community is at and where everyone's at right now.
Yeah.
And so that's I think the most interesting part of it is it's not as straightforward just saying like, oh yeah, we want more items in the game right now. Cause it's like, okay, but you can't have literally anything else.
Yeah, we want more of everything and we can only have more of one thing.
Yeah, that's basically what the feeling is.
Week. Yeah. So so it's been interesting and I think this kind of comes also to the question of pacing.
Yeah.
Which is as a small dev team, we also have this potentially So people have been commenting on the Steam announcements and stuff in our patch notes and things like that the volume of stuff that we are adding to the game and the pacing at which we're patching this thing is pretty wild, mm-hmm. Especially for how small our team is, or maybe because of how small our team is. mm-hmm. And so there is an interesting question there when it comes to making sure that we don't burn ourselves out and figuring out how do we establish a good pace so that we can keep delivering content to people, but in a way that doesn't sort of crush our souls And also in such a way that, like, what happens if like, maybe I need to get LASIK or something, mm-hmm. which I do.
Yeah.
And
yeah, if you're out for a week.
What happens if I'm out for, yeah, or even just like 3 days, mm-hmm. you know, because it's
a whole patch.
Yeah, that's essentially a week's worth yep. of content right there. Yep. And so we would need to figure out how to prioritize our development such that's fine mm-hmm. for the players and that people don't feel disappointed that, like, even though for 8 weeks we've given a new thing every Wednesday, and then all of a sudden all we have on a given Wednesday is just like, here's some light optimizations and bug fixes or something. Right. So it's going to be the case that at some point that's going to happen
yeah.
where we aren't able to just like deliver, you know, tons four of pages of patch notes every yeah. week. And so we got to kind of figure that out, but
yeah, it's tricky. I think it's going to be completely fine.
Yeah.
Because when that does happen, and that's actually going to happen with fair frequency, because it's not just that problem. It's not just a problem of, you know, if we go on vacation, or because things like 4th of July are coming up where, like, basically mm-hmm. no one's doing anything and we're also not going to be doing anything, right? Mm-hmm. And that nukes, you know, several days. And Thanksgiving, you know, if we're in early access yep. all the way through Thanksgiving, nukes literally a whole week. And then, like, Christmas, you know, down yep. there. So,
also,
so there are yep. things that are guaranteed to basically to do that. But on top of that, we also at some point we'll need to work on, you know, bigger features mm-hmm. that require several weeks even to fully make and test out, that we want to treat more as like a release in and of itself, so that we don't actually test it in like small phases with the public beta and stuff. And so when that happens, we might have to then just skip a patch or two of the stuff that we would normally be putting out mm-hmm. so that we can then have this more substantial, exciting, yeah. substantial, big thing that comes out, you know, downstream.
Well, chances are it'll be more like, we'll still put out the weekly Wednesday patch, but it'll be more like, here's some
yeah, bug fixes and stuff, yeah.
and in general sort of low-hanging fruit kinds of improvements.
I think as long as people don't end up feeling like we've abandoned the game.
Well, it's all about communication.
Exactly.
It's like, hey, this week is it going to be a light patch because here's this new system that we're working on. Yeah. We think it's going to take one more week.
Yeah. I mean, the fact is that no one, by spending $20 on the game, nobody has made it so that we don't get to go on vacation. You know,
yeah.
like that is not what you have bought with that $20.
You bought a lifelong servant who will
yeah, develop. That is not how that yeah. works. And so, yeah. so yeah, and the fact is, like, we love the work and we work a lot. So mm-hmm. sure, one of us might take a week vacation, but we're probably only going to take one of those in an entire mm-hmm. year. And so I think people will cut us some slack. And if they don't, that's fine. Fuck them.
They'll just have to deal with it. yeah.
Well, it's crazy, right?
Yeah, that's just somebody being an asshole in that yeah. case. And there's literally nothing
you've been
we
giving
do.
Me 14 straight weeks of 60-hour-a-week content patches, and I demand one more.
Yeah.
You'll get it just next week.
Yeah.
You know? yeah. Well, it's an interesting note because I think we've been seeing a lot more reports still in the industry about, you know, other studios doing crunch stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Mortal Kombat Studio, which is NetherRealm, they had a big sort of expose that came out in a couple of different places. I was talking about this exact problem where people are working just an insane amount of time, and they also hire out a ton of contractors and then treat the contractors really poorly, you know, sort of thing where it's like, you know, requiring that either they work 100-hour weeks or they're not going to get a re-up on their contract for the next chunk, you know.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of this stuff that is happening, and you have to wonder at the end of the day how – I think part of it is that for some reason players of games have like a – are just, I mean, they're very intense, right? It's a fandom sort of thing. And so there's always this pressure to do, to just as a developer, to do as much as you literally physically can. And it's not just from like the investor side of things, you know what I mean? Or the publisher.
No, it's about, you need to move fast or because we're talking about a digital, our products live in the digital attention space, mm-hmm. which is, it shares the attention economy with Facebook and Netflix and yeah. YouTube and Reddit and everything else, right? And so if people get bored of your game because this week something didn't happen or mm-hmm. today something didn't happen, then that person may just be gone now. Like they may yeah. just wander yeah. off and then they just get sucked down some attention vortex and then they're just gone. And so this is where you saw with, for example, Fortnite. Fortnite, you know, this article comes out about their culture of just permanent crunch because in order to maintain a player base of several hundred million people,
yeah.
You have to never give people a reason to look somewhere else. You know, they can never glance off to somewhere and be like, oh, that game looks interesting. No, like you got to keep mm-hmm. all the shiny yep. new stuff in your game, which means just constant content delivery. So – I think it's man, it is hard.
Yeah, well, I think it's also the pace of development versus the pace of consuming of an entertainment product is wildly different.
Oh, yeah.
So the idea that, you know, because if a new gun comes out in a game, it's unpredictable. But if a new gun comes out in say Fortnite or something, right? You can load it up and you can have that gun right now.
And you shoot stuff and you've now experienced that gun.
Yeah.
Just like that.
And in a few days, you could have played with that same new weapon for hours and hours and hours and hours, right? But getting that thing in the context of the game to work might have taken a team of who knows how many people.
Might have taken 300 man hours.
Yeah, exactly. It might have taken a huge number of hours to get in there. And you get to go just sort of like use it. And you're like, oh, that was cool. Where's the next one?
Where's the next gun?
2 days later, after you've now sort of, you know, quote unquote, experienced this update.
And this is part of the reason why right now we're focusing on some of the systemic development for Levelhead, because
like the daily build,
the stuff that basically makes it so that we have a bit more breathing room as a studio to then, if we said, okay, I mean, people have been asking, for example, for new like backdrop pieces for just basically decorative purposes. The problem is what people don't understand usually about those environment pieces is that those are the heaviest art asset to make in the entire game. So you want new concrete tiles for the background, so they're like a kind of a cool purpley metal background. It's probably going to take me like 4 hours, which maybe doesn't sound like a lot of time. But when you look at the context of one patch, it's like that could be three levels.
That's like 15% of the work that might go into the next patch. Because it's also the case that – you know, we say, you know, like we're working 60 hours a week, except our studio is small enough that actually a lot of that is like meetings and planning.
Yeah.
And like we're also expanding our QA team. And we just spend a bunch of time doing that, you know. And so we wear a lot of hats. And so even though our patches that we put out are quite large, it is definitely not the case that those patches represent like all of our work hours. It's actually closer to like 2/3 maybe or something like that. So there's a lot of interesting considerations.
Yeah, well, I think that's why I'm super happy actually with the structure of Levelhead generally for being an early access game, because of the fact that it's a community oriented and user generated content oriented. It's
modular.
There is actually content coming out every single day that's new, just that we're not the ones who have to build it, right?
Yeah.
Which is an unbelievable burden off the backs of the developers.
Yeah, this is where when you see games that do really well in early access, it's usually, I mean, there are exceptions, but I think it's usually the case that they are games that have some kind of generative capacity. So either it's like a roguelike.
Procedural in some
way. Yeah, where like things are randomly generated. So if you look at like Deep Rock Galactic or things like that. Or they're games that are heavily built around creation. So Kerbal Space Program or Minecraft or, you know, that kind of thing.
Or Levelhead.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of those. They're all basically the same in terms of sort of level of success and respect that players get.
We're still waiting on that $1 billion offer from Microsoft.
Yeah. It's coming though. I'm pretty sure. I haven't checked my email this morning. I assume it's just
probably in there.
Yeah. So I think the other big thing that happened in the industry is that Epic bought Psyonix.
Which is wild.
All right, so Psyonix is the creator of Rocket League. And Rocket League, I think last week I saw an article that they passed 50 million sales. Not like dollars in sales, but unit sales at 20 or something dollars per.
Unbelievable.
Probably some sales in there, but regardless, it's a lot of money.
Well, and also they sell stuff within the game, so yeah, so true. At minimum, you know, that's probably a billion.
So who knows what the LTV of a user is for Rocket League, but it's probably at minimum like 15 bucks.
And one thing we know is that that's a pretty good moneymaker for the platforms that it's on. You know, if you're talking 50 million sales and each platform is taking their 30% cut at $20, that's a few hundred million dollars that went into the pockets of those distributors. And so and it's also been very good for Epic because Rocket League is made with the Unreal Engine. Mm-hmm. And if you sell Unreal Engine games, then you pay a royalty of the proceeds back to Epic.
And I think it's 5% of your cut after the store cut.
I believe so. So Epic also has made a huge amount of money from Rocket League. And now they bought Psyonix. And there was some confusion about the announcement, but it seems like – based on the veiled sort of ambiguous language
where they're not
double speak.
They're not saying
they aren't going to make it an exclusive.
They never said we're going to take Rocket League off of Steam. Correct. What they said was it will continue to be supported for players who have already purchased it.
Yes.
Which means they're not going to sell it anymore.
Yeah. Well, because if they knew that what the backlash was going to be, right? Mm-hmm. So if they knew that they were not going to do it, they would have just come out and said, we are not going to take this off of Steam.
Yeah.
So I think people's belief that that's what they are saying, that they are going to take it off of Steam is probably correct.
So this is, I think,
This is a new level of aggression, I think.
It is, and I think it speaks to a broader point, which is I think it really highlights what Epic is trying to do, mm-hmm. which I think Epic is trying to become the place where you buy blockbuster quality, globally famous AAA games. Mm-hmm. That's what they want to be. And Steam will be the place where you get everything. Whatever's left, right? Yeah. that doesn't have an Epic exclusive. And apparently this is kind of like the shot across the bow, because up until now, it's been games that haven't come out yet that are getting those Epic exclusives.
But it was still games that, had a Steam store page and had pre-orders and that kind of stuff.
So those things were like they were coming to Steam. Yeah. They hadn't gotten there yet, or they started to take pre-orders and then they switched over to Epic. Yeah. Now we're talking about Rocket League, which has been out since 2015 or something like that. Years.
This is nuts.
It's like a 4-year-old game that has 50 million sales and it has a global audience and it's just doing.
But it's also really interesting, the idea that this is also the first time I've ever heard of a game becoming exclusive after it was launched.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's this whole huge fight before you launch a game where you now have this negotiating power. You could say, if I put my game on your platform only, then now you get a competitive advantage as a platform by having my awesome game, et cetera, assuming you have an awesome game. So now you can negotiate, some sort of a exclusivity deal and everything. So it's a really interesting money-making scenario for all parties involved, right? But now the game's already out.
Right.
And it's weird to come back to that negotiation table.
Well, it's not that the game is going exclusive. It's that the studio is owned by Epic.
Yeah. No, but I mean, the outcome is the same.
Well, the outcome is that now is that all future revenue of Rocket League will no longer go to Valve and will instead go to Epic.
Yep. If they do this full exclusive.
Because there's that interesting question of what does it mean for the game to be supported on Steam? Because if, like, let's say, for example, Epic says, hey, Rocket League is free to play now and it's full of loot boxes. Mm-hmm. Which it already is full of loot boxes, so now it's free to play and it's full of even more loot boxes. And essentially they tried to sort of switch it to more of a Fortnite
which they could do,
model, which I'm assuming there's no reason why they wouldn't do that.
When you have in-app purchases on Steam, do they have to go through Steam?
They do
have to go through it.
Okay. Yeah,
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the question, is like, if they switch it over to the Epic Store and then change the model, the financial model of the game, how does that spill back over to to the Steam version of the game or the PlayStation version or any of those things? Because I can't see.
Presumably, though, because you can also – because if – I'm not sure if Epic lets you attach your Steam account to your Epic account or not. But if they do, then they can easily just ask if you own the game on Steam, right?
Which means –
give it to you on Epic. So it actually would be very easy for them just to basically take the player base away completely.
Right.
It's wild. It's seriously wild. Like, we've never seen something like this in terms of store fights. You know what I mean?
Nobody's had the resources to do this kind of a thing, And it's also going
to
be –
or the willingness to deal with the public backlash.
Yeah, that's the crazy piece of it too.
Yeah. So this is crazy.
Yeah.
This is just crazy.
Buckle in.
Yeah. I'm mostly just kind of excited.
Yeah, I'm amused.
Because it's just, I don't know what's going to happen, but so much of our time has been spent just feeling like we're tiny pawns and or we're like little tiny boats in this giant ocean of competitors.
Kraken.
And now all of a sudden they're actually going after each other.
Yeah.
And we can just kind of like just eat some popcorn. Just kind of watch. Wild.
Well, yeah, the thing that I'm the most curious about is, what is Valve gonna do? Because they've been absolutely silent about this whole thing, and they were silent with the Fallout 76 thing, where they were just like, yeah, we're just not gonna sell through Steam, and then Fortnite not on Steam, and then the Epic Store opening up, Valve says nothing. That 88% instead of 30% or instead of a 70% cut, Valve says nothing. Tim Sweeney even comes out and is like, if Valve would change their store cut, then
we would just stop
to match ours, then we would just literally stop doing exclusives. Mm-hmm. Valve says nothing. Rocket League gets bought up. Valve says nothing. Like, what's gonna be the thing?
They gotta do something.
They gotta have something brewing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because the fact is that this doesn't make their platform look good to not be doing anything about this, but it also makes their platform less valuable to be losing players.
Be
at least seeming to be losing market share, right? Because one possibility here is that despite how enormous Epic is and how effective they are at capturing the exclusives and stuff, that Steam has the numbers to say, actually, this doesn't matter to our platform, right? Yeah. That's possible, but they're not telling anybody that.
Yeah.
So now we, as developers who are trying to figure out where can we sell our game, right? if we're, you know, we're already on Steam, so this is like kind of a moot question, but if we were a different developer with a game coming down the pipe and we had the opportunity to go try to like lock down an exclusive deal or whatever, and we're looking at this, what's going on right now, right? Then what we would see is basically Steam getting beat up on and doing nothing.
Yeah, right.
With a way worse deal, apparently, for me, right, versus Epic, who may give me an exclusivity deal where they actually give me a whole bunch of money, mm-hmm. And are also the ones that seem to be kind of like taking over here. And Allison, the question starts to get really interesting is how do I go over there, especially when you discount the value that Steam provides in terms of its discovery system and its infrastructure.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think it's one of those value propositions that is just like taxes, right? It's like we pay a lot of money for taxes, mm-hmm. but that's also the reason that we have things like public schools and roads and all kinds of stuff, right? So you get something with that. And of course, you also get a whole bunch of stuff you don't want because none of us get to choose where that money goes, right?
Right.
And so it's not all just for you. It's kind of for everybody. It's for some sort of generic system. And that's the same deal with Steam. It's like, yeah, you're basically paying this really heavy tax that's going into development of the system that is supporting your game. But what you get in return is it's very hard to really understand it and to understand its impact on your success, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I don't know if we can go into any numbers or not, but one of the things that was interesting with the Levelhead Early Access launch was, on the one hand, early access stuff is suppressed on Steam. So then it felt like Steam was not really getting their money's worth as a consequence, right? But on the other hand, they put up a banner or they put up a pop-up ad for us, right? Which by far and away was
the biggest thing that could have happened
and drove, you know, like we also spent a whole bunch of money on Facebook ads, mm-hmm. and we have our Ballyhoo newsletter that goes out to a huge number of people. Like we have all this other stuff.
And they didn't register on the graph.
Yeah, it didn't even register on the graph. It was only like Steam was the thing that did it. So when you see something like that and you're like, okay, now as a consequence of that, Steam takes 30% of our money. Like,
seems fine.
That seems fine. That seems like
honestly, totally
that
fine.
Seems totally fine because they, to me, they basically earned their keep. In that,
but there were
in
also sense, right? 40 something other games that came out the same day that
didn't have that exactly. Up. Yeah. So I think it's this interesting question. Whereas when the system works for you, then
you're like, yeah.
Then it feels then it actually feels fair. When it doesn't, of course, it feels unfair. But the interesting thing here is that the Epic model is not scalable.
Yeah,
of just like correct. Take a game, throw a fuck ton of money into it, and have it as an exclusive.
Or even just put it for sale, because the truth is as the store gets more – like so as a developer, you wouldn't even necessarily need to be offered a deal right now.
Yeah,
because
it's
– to go to the store, because the numbers that people are showing, like 300,000 units sold within like a week or two being on Epic, that's great. With the store cut in there, that's phenomenal. And so you don't actually need to be paid by Epic to make it be a good deal to go on the store.
That'll only be true for, you know – as long as it takes until they open up the floodgates on that store.
And well, so
I don't know.
And if they don't open up the floodgates, then you as a regular old indie developer can't get in there anyway. Yeah.
I don't know if you could say that it's not scalable though, because scalability is all about the audience. Like the audience is scalable. As long as the business model keeps attracting more and more people, then because essentially what Epic needs is to routinely have the top quality games available.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way that means that you don't have to sift through 1,000 bad games to find them, right? Because that's kind of the chief complaint that people have on about every store and that they don't have about the Epic store, right? It's like you could go into the Epic store and just throw a dart and just hit a random game and probably have a really good time with it because it's completely curated. And I think that's the thing that they're trying to do to separate themselves out, which means if they keep attracting more and more players, all they have to do is just keep having a nice rhythm of curated, really high quality.
But what
games.
That does mean is that does shut out your average indie developer completely from that market.
But it's scalable for them.
It's scalable for them, but it's not scalable for the rest of us, actually.
No, it's totally not. It's quite bad for us, actually.
It's actually quite bad for us because we can't get in there. And so the thing that's missing from this whole
– And if we all could get in there, it would also be bad for us because now we're all in there.
Yeah, it would have the same problems that Steam has again, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think it's an interesting thing that I've seen is – completely missing from all the discussions about this stuff is the fact that this model basically can't work for everybody. It just can't. And everybody's talking about it as like, why isn't Steam basically doing this? And like, well, you know what, this is just where we have to go now. It's like, no, this is going to work great for some people. It's going to work fucking fabulously. And the rest of us are going to be basically like, our only place that we can go is Steam, which again can do really well for us. But if Epic is stealing all of the top AAA titles and then therefore stealing the audience, then that actually means that the rest of us have a smaller and smaller pie, you know, available on Steam even that we have access to.
Yeah. I mean, this totally reminds me of the kinds of conversations that we have about developing systems in Levelhead, just in the sense that developing a large, complicated system that people are developing content for and putting things into, and you have people on both sides of the equation. You've got creators and you've got consumers, right? Mm-hmm. So in the case of Level, it's people building levels and then it's people playing levels. And what seems really good for somebody on one side of the thing may actually create a terrible experience for people on the other side. So in the case of having a store, for example, that's completely open and anybody can upload stuff, you think to yourself like, well, as a creator, that's great for me because I want to upload my stuff.
I get a shot.
And then as a consumer of the things, this is terrible because now all of a sudden you can't find even though there's a lot more stuff, you now have to wade through just a pile of it to get to the thing you want. And then
there might even be good stuff that otherwise couldn't have been there.
Right.
But
you're going to find it. Yeah. And then on top of that, now you have this sort of circular side effect, which is now it's bad for creators again, right? Like, like you do a thing that was good for creators, but because it's bad for the consumers, now it's also bad for the creators.
Yeah.
Because everything is interconnected. So.
But again, only subsets, right? Because I think the problem is like there aren't just creators, right?
Yeah.
There's creators of content that basically like – is financially viable and content that is not. And then once you're in the financially viable category, there's a huge stratification of just how viable that thing is. Yep. And so the fact is it was not good for developers who are making stuff that nobody would buy.
It's always been hard for those.
It's always been hard and it will continue to be hard. And now, sure, you can put your stuff on the platform and then it's easy to be upset because like Steam didn't sell that thing for you, right? But that was never going to happen and cannot happen. And so, I think there's too little nuance in the discussion of like the benefits for developers of all this stuff and like whether or not Steam is earning its cut and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think people are just not paying enough attention to the fact that most stuff that's going out on Steam is bad. And so most of the creators that are making stuff that cannot be sold.
Right.
To any reasonably sized audience.
So this also is part of the ecosystem of these engines. So Unity, Game Maker, Unreal Engine, whatever. Like, as it becomes easier and easier to make games, it becomes easier to make throwaway games, right? Well, like a game where like you can make a game over a weekend and then drop $100 and put it up on Steam if you want to. And so because the barriers keep getting lower and lower, then the investment gets lower, which means the risk is lower, so that you think to yourself, all I have to do is make like $100 on this game and then it's worth it for me to put it up on Steam. Mm-hmm. And you don't think to yourself, but would this make the ecosystem of Steam worse for everyone in the long run? Right. And would it come back? No, like you don't think about that. So it's like the tragedy of the commons kind of a situation. So that's all very interesting. Like, we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, we'll keep it on. What's it all going to mean?
Let's get on to questions. These questions come from our listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net, and we are taking it upon ourselves to answer the highest upvoted question every week.
What we got this time?
So this time, we have two that are pretty related. One of them is the highest upvoted from Vic is Thick. Will GR18 be added to the mural at bscotch.net/podcast? So we have our podcast box art. And Zivix asked essentially the same thing, but he also said that he wanted to see a pop jaw in there as well. So we now have like, we got the Quadrupus, we've got Flux, we've got.
This is the problem with, making a piece of art to celebrate something, is if that thing can change over time, then
maybe when we launch fully Levelhead, we can have the box art.
To me, it's still cooking. It's still very much in dev, so. GR18 has not graduated yet into the mural.
We need a box art that has GR18 and a little graduation cap.
I did it.
That could be good, actually.
Yeah.
We
haven't actually talked about what the ending of the campaign would be, but I assume it would be some kind of graduation ceremony for GR18.
Definitely. Yeah.
Since it's all about training your GR18 to deliver packages. Next question comes from C. Price. Would you guys ever consider doing a Levelhead user-created content stream? It would be cool to see some of the devs react to the interesting and garbage levels out there. Or why don't you guys try to beat them in co-op mode?
It would be fun. We've talked about doing a co-op one in particular because co-op is hysterical. Mm-hmm. And
also, none of the levels will have been designed for that.
Yeah, there's only a few. Actually, there's only a few two-player levels that have come out, two-plus player levels that have come out. Because, of course, it's harder to publish them because you need two people around.
Yeah. Well, it's also harder to get people to play them because two people have to be able to play it. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, one of the things that we did talk about, which we haven't landed on anything, so this is just conjecture or whatever, is in certain time intervals, collecting video snapshots of some of the cool things that the community has made and then putting together some kind of like a like a video montage or something.
Highlight reel basically from last month or something.
Like that. Yeah, because I think it'd be really cool if, you know, you go to the Steam page of the game or something, then you can see a highlight reel of all the cool shit that the community has put together. Because I think we were discussing this last week about like, how do we win people over? Like, and make them take the plunge into jumping into an early access game, because it's so easy to get burned by an early access game. And we think that we have something that's a lot more stable than your typical early access title in terms of just like how few bugs and issues the game has, and is a huge value proposition. So we just have to convince people. So what we have to do is create that FOMO.
Yep.
Like we have to show everybody who's just watching the game how much fun everybody is having who already has the game. And so try to come up with those kinds of things. I think the trouble with doing a stream is that we are not sort of like real-time entertainer, like YouTube personalities.
Yeah, doing a YouTube video where you can slice it down is the best, because you can control the pacing on the editing side as opposed to having to do the pacing live.
Yeah. Right? So like when we did the play through of the Shenanigans Jam games, then that was like that, where
it was 40 minutes, I think, and I sliced it down to like 10.
Yeah. So when we're playing these games and stuff, yeah, we are for at least 3/4 of the time just kind of being like pretty chill and mundane about it, which doesn't make for maybe very good stream.
Yeah, but I do think it'd be really fun to do because I've been playing through them, of course, when I do the community spotlight and stuff, and I bookmark stuff throughout the week as I see it pop up on Discord and play it. And it is very surprising, the stuff that's being built, almost without fail. Every single time I pop in there, I'm like, what?
Yeah,
it's happening.
Yeah, so, and we have our community spotlight going out as well, where we highlight those things.
I've seen some pretty spectacular pinball machines.
Yeah,
yeah, but yeah, mostly watching people on Twitch play them. But really extensive. You know, just like with a lot of stuff going on, that it really just truly feels like a pinball machine.
Yeah.
So that's kind of been a fun genre.
It's too fun.
Yes. Yeah, and then we also now have a new genre, which is the Raceway, which is people who made a level concept. It was started by Retrophile TV. As this concept where you do 3 laps, and the essentially around a track, and it changes every time. And each lap you go through, you kind of go through a 1-way gate where you got to hit a lock switch and sort of like activate some new set of things on the track. And then also once you hit all 3 switches, which means you've done 3 laps, then it teleports you to the end and you win. And so people have made a bunch of variants on that, and it's just been really crazy to kind of see these kinds of things.
Yeah.
Yep. Next question comes from Ronk Donka Grinmail.
Hey,
so buckle up. Seth mentioned some physics changes he recently made to level head that boosted performance something like 9 million times. I might be off a little. Could you touch on what changes were made? It's neat to hear the magic that goes into game dev. Thanks.
Well, you also this weekend optimized saving.
Yeah, well, I was. So I'm often just lurking sort of in the Discord and just like seeing even if I'm not like engaged in the conversation, I'm just kind of seeing the kinds of things that people are just making these kind of like offhanded complaints about, where they aren't actively like seeking a solution, but they'll just make a mention and be like, man, this thing is bleh, you know? And in this case, it was people who were making these really huge levels with tons and tons of intricate moving parts in them. It was taking something like 20 or 30 seconds to save these levels.
Yeah, that's way too long.
Yeah, because there's so much sort of crunching of numbers and compression that happens to make sure that the level sizes stay small, that it just has to do a lot of like cross-checking from one item to another. And if you have 10,000 items in your level, that's a lot of things.
Yep.
And so this weekend I went through and I went through that saving logic and found a whole crap load of ways to sort of pre-process things and optimize stuff. And I think I cut it down by – on my test project, I had one that was taking 12 seconds to save, and I got it down to about like 0.7. So
yeah,
I found some
– significant improvement.
I found some stuff. Mm-hmm. I think with all of these things, without getting into the technical side of it, there's always an easy way to implement it, and then there's a best way, right?
Well, not a best way, just a pretty good way.
Yeah. There's a best way for how much time you have available. Yeah. And so we don't really prematurely optimize. And so really all it comes down to is in GameMaker, they have this fantastic debugging tool that has a thing called the Profiler. And so you can run the game and you just like say, start profiling, and it will – it will record the CPU processing time of every single thing that happens in your code.
So you can see exactly where the problem is.
Yeah, so you can see like, wow, this one script was called 39 million times in the last 10 frames while nothing else was called even 1% of that, right?
Maybe I should speed that thing
up. Yeah, so you can look and like say either all I have to do is just like switch around something in an if statement in there and boom, I've cut off half the processing time, you know. Or I just figure out how to use that less, you know. And so I did the same thing in the editor over the weekend. I found that people who had levels that had tons and tons of coins and portals in them, those levels were running really slow in the editor. And so I had a test project that was running at like 15 frames per second. And then I got it up to like 80 or 90 just by, you know, just switching a couple things. Yeah. And so that all comes down to that profiler. So, yeah, just use that thing. I won't like talk about the physics changes because that's just too in the weeds.
But it's funny because I think the weekend work that like I tend to do is more so on basically keep tabs on, go look at the Discord and see what's going on. And then it's either design thinking or it's sort of this marketing preparation stuff. And then on your side, it sounds like it's almost like weeding, right? Where it's like nothing needs to be done, but you kind of go in there and you're like, you just kind of tidy up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, just because it's fun stuff, you get a cup of coffee and just kind of sit down and do that. So it's an interesting way to you get some work done, but there's no need.
Yeah. It's basically my Saturday and Sunday mornings since we launched into early access has just been like, grab a cup of coffee, get some toast, and just sit down for 2 or 3 hours and just kind of like just clean things up.
Just poke around.
Yeah. Because these are those kinds of problems that they don't break the game, but they just suck.
Yep.
Like if you have to wait 30 seconds to save your level while you make a giant level, then you're now dissuaded from making giant levels. Mm-hmm. And like, we want giant levels. They're awesome, you know? And so any little thing we can do to kind of just smooth that out. And those things add up like crazy, you know, like you do these kinds of optimizations, you know, a couple hours every weekend for 6 months. By the time you get to the end, it's running like, like butter. Like a seal covered in butter.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Very bad at running.
Actually. I was going to say, you know how they run.
You know. Well, it depends. Downhill, very fast. Mm-hmm. Very, very fast.
Yeah.
Next question comes from B Scotch Christine.
Hey.
So we got one. This one's coming. The call's coming from inside the house.
Oh, God.
Who says, have any of you participated in an underwater basket weaving competition?
Mm-hmm. Wait, so what is the underwater basket weaving thing?
Isn't that some like joke?
Yes.
So I
looked this up because I was like, I've heard this referenced. So underwater basket.
It's like mocking liberal arts education or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
Underwater basket weaving is an imaginary degree that people who mock the idea of
knowing more than one
of
thing.
Of knowing lots of things.
Yeah.
Make about just like that concept. So if you say like, oh yeah, I got my degree in blah, they're like, oh yeah, did you also get a minor in underwater basket weaving? Like it's basically a way to say that the thing that you know is useless.
I know many useless things and I participated in many of them.
Yeah. Now here's the thing. Knowing useless things is great because they do become useful. You know enough useless things, now you have all kinds of crazy shit that you can do.
That's the weird problem.
So the other thing is, it turns out that when you weave baskets, depending on the material that you use, in some cases you do have to soak the reeds in water to make them pliable.
That makes sense.
So this is kind of an ironic twist here because the joke was originally made as a way to like kind of poke fun at people who know things.
Unsurprisingly, it was made by ignorant people.
Right? So I don't think there are literal underwater basket weaving competitions.
I'm sure someone has actually arranged one because it's, you know.
I know. I actually, when I was looking this up, I saw, you know, like a picture of a scuba diver weaving a basket.
So that's awesome.
I assume you would get more points for depth, like the deeper down you are.
And the bigger the basket, obviously.
Well, once you bring it up, because it would decompress and become huge, you know. That's how.
True, yeah.
What if you weaved it out of those swim noodles? You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
Like a huge basket.
These are hard to keep underwater, though.
They are.
That's why it's a sport.
You get extra points for that. And then when you rise it to the surface, of course, it's going to expand like crazy. If you bring it down real low, right, you get these tiny little noodles.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, you bring a styrofoam noodle down to like 1,000 feet below the surface.
It just
turns into like a spaghetti noodle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weave it together, take it up.
Boom.
Boom, you got a giant basket.
It must get harder and harder to pull that thing down, right? Is that
the further down you go?
Yeah,
I don't think so.
Because there's like there's that neutral buoyancy idea, right? Which is like whatever kind of volume of air you got going for you right now, it's like you can bring that down. There's a certain level where you just stick. Mm-hmm. Presumably, like the more you go down below that, like the harder it is to go down. Like,
but the air is becoming more compressed, so it's losing presumably air,
so is everything around it. You know what I mean?
Right. So is it just staying the same buoyancy? See, this is why you got to get a degree in underwater basketball. Yeah. We don't know.
It's actually a complex problem.
Yeah.
What's the most useless thing that you know?
The most useless thing that I
well, or the thing or is, that you have been forced to learn. But
the thing is that uselessness is always context dependent.
It is.
Because like I'm really good at bipedding. You know what I mean? I'm also pretty good at taking ovaries out of flies.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Right? We've all been there.
So I'm not gonna make use of that for literally the rest of my life.
Yep. But if you're doing cancer research, it's quite useful.
It is useful.
It's incredibly useful.
Because you know, that'd be a good sort of switcheroo to do with the basket weaving thing. Just to be like, oh, do you have a degree in taking flyovers out, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's equivalent. It's the same sort of thing.
Yeah. Yep. So in all cases, the idea of mocking somebody for knowing things, it generally is just going to kind of backfire.
it's just – well, yeah, like we talk about with reviews, right? It reveals more about you than about the thing that you're trying to review or mock.
Yes. You know? Yes. So somebody gets a degree in something. Now, what you can say is that depending on where you go to school and how pricey your degree is, you may want to lean toward a field that will help you pay that down.
Yes.
Yeah. If you're viewing your college education as an investment,
vehicle,
you know, into future income.
Which is becoming less and less wise as time goes on, just in the general sense.
Right. So there is a fair commentary about that.
Definitely.
But, you know, knowing
but that's
stuff,
a different question.
That's though. A different question. Yeah. All right. Next question comes from I am Cade. I lost my job recently and I'm now just filling out tons of applications online. Everything online seems disconnected to who I am as a worker. Mm. What do you think is the most important quality for an employee as an employer? And how do you find that out before you hire someone?
That's a hard one.
For starters, sorry about losing your job. It's a bummer.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yep.
Sorry about it.
Now you got to go through this crap. So that sucks, but we'll help. Maybe.
Here's the advice. Maybe. So as far as what I think the interesting point about being disconnected from sort of who you actually are and what you actually are as a worker. The problem is that, of course, a person who you're going to spend like 40 hours a week with being represented through like a few questions on a piece of paper, like you're just never going to get as an employer. You can't get the thing right. You can't know actually 100% what's going to happen. And I think about it kind of, I mean, in a sense, it's, you know, if you're on Steam and you're looking around at games and stuff like that, most of the time what you're looking for is reasons actually to not buy something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there are so many games.
There's so many games. So,
with most job applicants.
Yes. Most employers are looking for reasons to not hire you first and foremost. Yeah. So that's the sort
looking for red flags.
Yeah. Any red flags, whether that's.
Or even just orangish flags. Yep. Also, we should be careful with flag colors because they probably mean things in like soccer and stuff.
Those are cards.
That's true.
We're good.
Because I want to make sure if I said like yellow, I was like, is that actually worse or is that
all right, let's
now?
Say let's say something that is bad as a stop sign. Okay. That'll work.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stop signs. Yeah. You're looking for stop signs.
Yes.
To be like, I'm gonna stop.
Yeah.
Looking at this person's application.
And the thing is like
also
the more,
yield signs.
The higher the volume of applicants to a thing, the more intense and even silly those initial throwouts are. So there's like I've heard of companies where they literally look at a stack of applications and they'll just throw half of them away.
Yep.
You don't even look at them because
they just need fewer applications.
Yeah, we need fewer, so you just chop it in half, right?
And they think, well, there is no perfect candidate.
Yeah,
that's not a thing.
The real trick when you're looking at anything that basically is you submitting an application to get something, which is employment's one of those things. You know, us submitting our talks to like GDC is one of those things. Even us sending emails to press people, actually one of those things. You have to realize you have to be very, very careful not to couple your worth with the response. Because the reality is it very much is a numbers game. So the example we give is like we go do our GDC talks. We used to submit one that was as good as we could make it, right?
And it would always be rejected.
And it would always be rejected. So then we started submitting 11 at a time. And then mainly we got one of those in at least each time.
And it was never the talks that we were like, oh, yeah, this will get in.
Yeah.
It was always like, I'll just throw this extra one in there just in case. And then they're like, yeah, that's the one. That's what we need.
And so it is very much it's a volume game. It's very random. And the total volume of rejections you're going to get is always extremely high because, of course, you just need one on the success side for it all.
Yes. Now, there's a couple of extra things, too. So when I was going through an MBA program, we were coached very thoroughly. So what I learned as I was going through the MBA program was that the whole point of it was to teach you how to interview and get jobs.
Not how to do the jobs.
No, you just need to interview. You need to get in there. Yeah. It turns out that in a lot of cases, doing a good job at something is really just convincing people that you've done a good job at something.
Yes.
So that's a lot of what you learn in like these upper level business schools. And so there was a lot of commentary about how to interview well, but also just how to like land the interview. And some of the advice they gave was things like, when you look at the company that you're applying to, look at how they format things and look at how – any kinds of documents you can see to see like what's their font choices. Like what kinds of things do they do to kind of like make something look like it's theirs, you know? And you can do these kinds of subtle things like if you have any kind of color on your resume for starters, like keep it minimalist generally. Mm-hmm. But use the company colors, you know?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like just do those kinds of small things that make them think like, I could see this person working here.
Yep.
They know our fonts.
It looks like they're to do.
Yeah. So make it kind of look like it's like that dress for the job you want, right? And then the other thing was they said nobody really gets hired on their merits because of the fact that when you get to those –
merits like, are invisible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but they're all the same.
Yeah.
Like if you have a stack of 1,000 resumes and it's like, all right, here we have like 100 people who all have high GPAs and et cetera, et cetera.
Highly
like five plus years work experience. They all come with great recommendations from their supervisors and stuff.
Well, you also know that it's – but again, when I say that they're all the same because none of it means anything. You actually can't tell if one person says I've got 5 years experience, another person says I've got 3 years experience. You can't tell if those are actually different. Right. You can't tell. You don't know offhand if the 5-year one is better.
What was in the experience?
Yeah, because that's all that matters. So it literally is all invisible. There's just no way to know.
And so the mistake that people tend to make is they focus really hard on all those numbery qualifications. Mm-hmm. So how many years of experience? What your GPA was in college? Like how much growth you brought to X previous company? Like you got to have those things so that you stay in the pool. But the thing
is, employers also like when they're screening stuff, they just throw things away based on that.
But the thing that employers really hire on is, do they think like, would I like this person?
Yep.
And so that's where when we first moved to St. Louis, my wife was looking for work and she was fresh out of a master's program. She was applying for months and months and months and couldn't land even entry level jobs anywhere just because she didn't have those years of experience because she had just been doing school, right? And then the job she finally landed, because she had included as one line item at the very end of her resume that she was a tennis player in college. And then the person was like, well, you know, I feel like athletes are very motivated and driven and like the rest of it, sure, whatever. Like, yeah, okay, I guess you got a master's
degree. Well, that was all required to get in the door, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But the thing that set her apart from everybody else was that she was a collegiate tennis athlete.
But it only set her apart in that specific context because that was a person who saw that as something that was valuable and interesting. Right.
And so part of it is anything you can learn about the company's values, about what they profess to believe in terms of like what kinds of people they're looking for, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, you got to line up your application.
Yeah, think about things in your life that you are interested in or that you do or that you've achieved or whatever and include a couple of those like personal interests.
You know, I included cheerleading on mine when I was graduating from school, which always in every single interview I had, they were like,
which you did have interviews because
yeah, they were like, tell us about that because it was one of the things people were like, because I think my byline was something like, it was something along the lines of, you know, like maintained optimism in, you know, sort of like spinning it in the same sort of resume speak. But people always found it very interesting that was an included piece. And then there's lots of people who either did sports or actually were cheerleaders in tons of these organizations. And so they're like, oh, do you know how to do like a full lib? Can you do it with a partner stunning sort of thing? And I was like, yeah, I did that all the time.
Because the people who you're really applying to work with are not one dimensional.
Yeah.
You know, like they have –
they're not robots.
They have
people.
Other interests and maybe it's that you're a member of like a bowling league. You know, like whatever it is, like just put those interesting things
on that note, though, I think the biggest part of it is actually alongside doing the applications and stuff, make sure you're actually going out and networking. You cannot you cannot speak highly enough of just the effect of knowing a lot of people and being a person who's been around in a way. So St. Louis, there's a bunch of events literally weekly like Venture Cafe where it's just like 400, 500 people show up and you just chat about stuff. And there's tons of people there who run companies, tons of people who are looking for people to do stuff. And knowing someone, isn't it like 70% of jobs or something actually just get done through, like they never actually get posted or something?
It's hard to say, but it's a lot.
It's some insane problem is, number.
It's like, under it's the table cash. Yeah, you can't actually know. But I think the one sort of cardinal sin that people commit when they're networking is trying to connect with people over the fact that they need a job.
Yeah.
Which is no
– there's no bigger turnoff for a conversation.
Yeah.
And so, I've actually stopped going to some events because of that. Because we don't even have any job positions open. We don't want to hire anybody. We're not doing any of that. Yep. And that's like the first question that somebody just asks is like
– hey, can I have a job?
Yeah. It's like –
I literally don't know you.
Yeah.
Like, I've never. I don't know what you're bringing. So actually, your objective with this kind of thing is
it's just to be a person.
To be a person, make friends, and just connect with people. So
meet people where they're at.
Yeah. So just talk. You know, ask. And if that's the kind of thing that makes you uncomfortable, it's really just all about asking questions.
Like, yeah. People love talking about themselves.
So just go and just be like, "What do you do?" And they'd be like, "Oh, I do this." You're like, "Oh, that's interesting. Tell me more about that." Mm-hmm. They're like, "Here I go." And then you just kind of buckle in.
I've had a 15-minute conversation with someone where all I did was ask questions. And at the end of it, I could see there was a moment as before I was like, "Well, I got to go. So I'm going to go." Where they realized
that they had never asked.
I don't even know this person. I was like, "This is fine."
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Whatever.
But yeah, I mean, people want to hire people who they like being around, and they like being around people who let them talk about themselves all day. Yeah. So.
And who have shared interests.
Yeah. And who seem interested in the things that they're interested in. And that comes out when you ask people questions and stuff like that. So do the networking, you know, be sure to highlight those personal interests and stuff like that. And then it's volume.
All volume.
Yeah. Don't take those rejections personally because it's not personal. It's fine. All right, so I think that's all the time we have for this week. We'd like to thank our producers, Fat Bart and Jen Koster, for putting the podcast together. Thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running, which is becoming more and more of a job as time goes on.
Yeah, basically, I can't keep up anymore.
Yeah. So to get more involved in the Butterscotch community, you can just go to podcast.bscotch.net, where we've got merch, links to the community Discord, a way for you to donate to the podcast, and links to the archives. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.